Good morning and good evening or good day to all of you, and thank you for joining us again for our last webinar of that particular series, The Great Invocation of Voice Diamond. Last webinars we have been talking about the origin of the Great Invocation, then we moved to its meaning in the last two webinars, and today the last one we will be focusing on its potency. And these are the three words that DK refers to the Great Invocation: meaning, potency, and origin. We see that DK has urged us to penetrate more deeply into the vital meaning of those amazing words of extraordinary potency, which embody a formula which has been in possession of the hierarchy since it was founded. So we looked at the formula in the last two webinars. So let's look at these amazing words of extraordinary potency in this particular webinar. We read from Foster Bailey that he remembers the strain of the days when the sun rose and Mrs. Bailey, or Alice Bailey, brought him the words of the Great Invocation as she had written them to the exact dictation of the Tibetan. Apparently it was an occasion of the most complete at-one-ment with him that she had ever achieved. It really shows us then the importance of the Great Invocation. We see also from the book, Sacred Vessel of the Mysteries, this wonderful book by John Burgess, who recounts from Mary Bailey's interview that DK was so intent on the words of the invocation being exact that he almost materialized in the dictation room to accomplish this transmission. And she recalls that it had to be recorded as close to the ancient phrases as possible using specific English wording. Now that's very interesting. As close to the ancient phrases as possible, using specific English wording. We will discuss this a little bit later when we talk about rhythm. So we'll come back to this point. And DK tells us that it has been very difficult for him to translate these seven ancient word forms which the Christ employs. Now again, we will discuss this later. Seven word forms. That's how the Great Invocation has been given to the Christ. But DK, for our benefit, has translated these seven ancient word forms into a longer version. But he reassures us that they are just as potent if said with mental intensity and ardent purpose. And again, we will come back to this quote later on, because these are very vital words. And DK tells us that this invocation, being a solar instrument, a potent solar instrument, designed to bring about changes and needed readjustment on the physical plane, is so powerful that even when it was suggested for the general use in our world, there was some opposition amongst the members of hierarchy, because they thought that it was far too potent on the undeveloped people. But however, DK tells us that its use has been justified. And now it is recommended, or DK recommends, that we increase its spread even more widely so that the potent effects are being felt on the physical plane. And this new invocation, DK tells us, will be to the new world religion what the Lord's Prayer has been to Christianity in the last 2,000 years, or the 23rd Psalm to the spiritually minded Jew. So we are the John the Baptist in this stage of the forerunners. We are the pioneers. We are the avant-garde for the Christ, preparing men's hearts and minds for his return. And so this invocation has been given to us so that we can prepare Christ's return. So now let us see its potency, its individual, group, and planetary effects. So let's start with the individual potency first. DK tells us that no one can use this invocation for illumination or for love without causing powerful changes in his own attitude. His life intention, his character and goals will be completely changed, and his life will be altered and will be made spiritually useful. Now, to fully understand the effects and how they occur, we need to look more deeply in the soul-mind-brain alignment that DK emphasizes so much in his teachings. So let's have a look at this, the alignment. But first of all, let's look at the mind-brain connection, and then we'll move on to the soul-mind-brain alignment. We know that the human brain is the main organ of the nervous system. And together with a spinal cord, it makes up the central nervous system. This is how the soul is informed about the physical world. It's through the senses to the brain, the headquarters in the head. And we know too that the nervous system is the concretization of the nadis, the etheric nervous system, called the nadis in Hindu terminology. And also we know that these nadis carry the quality of energy from the thinker, where whatever point of consciousness or stage of consciousness that he's at. So it can be from the astral plane, or right up to the spiritual triadal plane. So therefore, according to the focus of consciousness or the psychic state of awareness and the point of evolution of the individual, so will be the type of energy carried by the nadis, passing them therefore to the outer nervous system in the brain. So now let's look at the lower mind. What is the lower mind? We know that the mental body is composed of four types of essences. It is made of matter of the fourth, fifth, sixth, and seventh matter of the mental plane. Here is DK's diagram here of the four aspects of the chakras, the mental aspects of these chakras on the fourth subplane of the mental plane. So the brain is a most delicate receiving organ from the three head centers. The brain from the three head centers, the crown, the ajna, and the outer major. And it is also a transmitter and a very powerful directing agency from the outer major to the carotid gland, which has a very close relation to the heart center and to the heart. From the ajna to the pituitary body in the brain, and the crown to the pineal gland right in the middle of the brain. So it is through this triple mechanism in the brain, which uses, in the head rather, which uses the physical brain as a receiving agent and as a transmitting agent, thus making the mind the seat of consciousness and the brain its physical organ. But we also know that these three chakras don't always work together synchronously, and they don't work together until the third initiation, when the three vibrate in unison. So making therefore the brain, which accounts rather from the differences in people in the way that they manifest whatever the soul transmits. So therefore, now let's have a look at the soul, mind, and the brain connection. So the brain is a sensitive receiver of the thoughts and desires of the soul as he transmits them through the medium of the mind. The mind being regarded as in the nature of the sixth sense, and the brain a very sensitive receiving plate. The sixth sense, or rather the mind, can be viewed as a chakra, and the brain its precipitation or its organ of perception. And we know that there are seven organs of perception: hearing, touch, sight, taste, smell, and the sixth one is the mind. And the seventh one, which is the synthetic sense, the intuition. So this is how it works. The soul in the egoic lotus impresses the lower mind through the mental base, mental sacral, mental solar plexus, and mental spleen with its energies. And this, in turn, when the disciple has made the right alignment and the contact with his soul, the results are increased light. And that light pours down and irradiates not only the mind, but the brain consciousness as well. So therefore, the disciple sees the situation more clearly, and he knows where he needs to go and the next step that he has to take from then on. So the effects, therefore, of the great invocation must go from the soul. That's where it starts, because the nature of the soul is love, and its group purpose, is its sole purpose, is group good. It must be backed by the will and carried on a thought form of mental substance. And therefore, this process, or the effects, are the will and the love and the intelligence of the man who uses the great invocation are greatly stimulated. However, DK tells us, when the brain, which is the lower receiving and distributing center within the head, as we've just seen, is incapable of the needed dual activity, which is retaining the awareness of the intent, the meaning, and the purpose of the words being used, and at the same time carrying on the task of sending forth the potency which is hidden and yet which is conveyed by the words or the sound. So these two activities if they are not present, then all that the disciple has succeeded to do is retaining the created thought form on the mental plane. He doesn't materialize this, the potency of the great invocation, and therefore he doesn't achieve the desired results. So therefore, what we really need here is to understand the intent, the meaning, and the purpose of the words of the great invocation. And once we've understood it, therefore we can send its potency out, because we are fully aware of its meaning and its purpose and what it's intended to do. So these two activities must be carried on simultaneously by the soul through the medium of the mind and therefore to the brain. So for the great invocation to be effective from DK's point of view, or the great invocation, the ageless wisdom point of view, it's dependent on us understanding these two activities of the brain, and an understanding of, or an integration between, our soul, our mind, brain, and the great invocation of the spoken word or sound. And that brain consciousness is so critical in the ageless wisdom teachings that it is an essential factor in initiation, which we've seen in the last webinars. So it is a test imposed upon increasing rigidity from one initiation to another, to see just how far the initiate is capable of retaining in his brain consciousness the facts of these worlds, the three human worlds, the world of soul consciousness, the world of the ashram, the triadal world, right up to Shambhalic influence. And in every single case, we are told, the test, in order to be passed correctly, must involve the brain consciousness. The facts of all these worlds, from our worlds right up to Shambhalic world, must be registered correctly, must be recognized and interpreted simultaneously upon the physical plane. So we can see how important this brain consciousness is in the ageless wisdom. And therefore, we can see how in the great invocation, where there is a very clear demand for the three aspects of divinity, will, love, and intelligence, to manifest on earth through the very clever placing of the words at the end of each stanza. Will of men, return to earth, descend on earth, seal the door where evil dwells. Where is that, if not down here on earth, the three lower worlds? And the synthetic sentence again ends in earth, on, yes, in earth. And always, DK tells us, the emphasis is placed on appearance and manifestation being the earth. So manifestation on the physical plane is crucial to the plan of the Logos. And we will discuss humanity as the symbol of the planetary brain cells later on. We'll come back to that point. So for now, let's discuss the potency of the great invocation on the group. We've seen on the individual, and now on the group. But we will backtrack for a minute, because we are being told that the Om is potent and effective when it's rightly used. And these are the effects on not only the individual, but also on the group. So let's have a look at the group effects and the individual effects of the Om, and then we will translate it in terms of the great invocation. So we are told that the Om will produce changes, will destroy what must be eliminated, and will build in through attraction what is desired in the fabric of the group life, in the group aura. And it will produce, incidentally, the needed changes in the individual life. So we need to ponder on this, because there's a, this is a very important paragraph from DK. So let's ponder a little bit more on the effect that the Om has on the individual. And we will know that, excuse me, and we know that the effect will be just as potent, the effect of the great invocation will be just as potent on the individual and on the group. So let's have a look at the effect of the Om on each body. On the mental plane, the Om stills the lower mind through the contact of the head chakra. It links up the personality with the soul, and it drives out the coarse particles, and it brings and or builds in the finer particles in the mental body. On the emotional level, it does the same thing. It stabilizes the emotional body, and it sets in motion the heart center through its contact with the latter. It drives out coarse matter and making the emotional body more limpid, more receptive. And it causes a rush of feeling from the atomic levels on the first subplane of the astral plane, right up to the intuitional plane, the fourth buddhic plane. It sweeps upwards and clarifies the channel. And on the physical plane, on the etheric level, it does exactly the same thing. It stimulates the divine flow. Breaks any congestion, and so that the divine flow can be smoother. And it goes way beyond the periphery of the body into the surroundings, and it creates a shell as a protection, as it drives out also discordant factors in the physical environment of the person. Now, how astounding is that? Now, the fourth effect of the Om is that it creates a funnel. The group or the individual, when it employs sound and rhythm, it opens up a funnel of communication between the group and the forces, the intelligences that they are seeking to approach. Now, through the correct intoning of certain sounds, whether it's the Om, whether it's the great invocation, or any word of power that we use for the Antikarana, this vacuum or empty funnel between the higher and the lower being formed, a force or power is poured down through the funnel and reaches its objectives down below. And what happens is that the individual is affected. Now, watch this, these words. The vivification of the microcosm affects the surrounding country and environment. So it's not just your physical environment. When groups of people get together, sound the great invocation, sound the words of power, or sound the Om, the individual is not only the individual is vivified and stimulated, but its environment around the individual and around the group is affected as well. Now that's an interesting and arresting thought, don't you think? And that's really worth us pondering on the effect every time we sound the Om or we say the great invocation. The potent effects is absolutely mind-blowing. And now, not only does it affect the country and the surrounding environment, it causes corresponding stimulation in all the kingdoms of nature, because the human kingdom is the midway between the soul kingdom and the other kingdoms. So we affect the three other kingdoms as well. So let's see other effects of the Om, if it's that powerful. So when the Om or the great invocation is sounded correctly, a strong current is set up and it puts the group en rapport with the brotherhood of hierarchy. A vacuum is created between that group and those on the inner side. All three groups, the personalities, the egoic groups, and hierarchy are linked in a triangle of force. It has a definite effect on the physical vehicles of the lower group. It intensifies the emotional and or the astral bodies of the group. And it stimulates the lower mind and opens up a channel with the higher field, like the soul field, which when it enters, it stabilizes the lower concrete mind. It also attracts the attention of the devas. It forms a protective shell around the group. And it also aids in the work of evolution, no matter how small. And yet, every effort that stimulates and facilitates the contact between the higher and the lower is an instrument in the hands of our Logos for the hastening of his plan. So if we think of all the effects in terms of the Om and its group effects, well, it is infinitely more true of the great invocation. That gives us even more courage, doesn't it? To just keep going, knowing that even though we can't see the results yet, But we know that this is what happens when we say the great invocation. Now, we saw earlier that the meditative forms or the great invocation, when employing sound through the words and rhythm, it opens up a funnel of communication between us down here and the powers we are seeking to approach. When we sound the great invocation on the right note and in the right rhythm, then the downflow from above stimulates the individual and the group, affecting the surrounding environment and country. What about this rhythm? Why is it so important? We know that the energy which produces order and rhythm is the seventh ray. Our lower world, the physical plane, is ruled and governed and conditioned by the seventh ray. Christ employs the great invocation, which has seven word forms. And we know that there is a very close link between the fourth ray and the seventh ray, between the Buddhic plane and the physical plane, or between harmony and rhythm. Because rhythm produces harmony, being so closely related, the fourth ray and the seventh ray being so closely related. The fourth Buddhic plane is a plane of harmony, of at-one-ment. And the seventh ray does exactly the same thing. It synthesizes the physical world. It brings into harmony the higher and the lower. And we know that the Lord of the seventh ray has a very, very special connection with the fourth Buddhic plane. So we read again the words that DK gave us, the exact words. Listen to this. The evocative power of the great invocation and the sound of its mantric rhythm is increasingly responsible for this work. The sound of its mantric rhythm. Let's have a look at the rhythm of the great invocation. Something very interesting is emerging. And I'm sure that you have your own ideas about this rhythm. You say the great invocation in a different rhythm, but it doesn't matter. The rhythm is the rhythm. So let's have a look. We notice that in each stanza, it starts with the word from. Now, this is an idea that Kay Hannan, I think you all know Kay, brought to my attention, that each stanza starts with the word from. And in the word from, it contains the sound or the word om. From, contained within that word. Therefore, right from the word go, it sets up that rhythm. And let's have a look now at the other words. So from starts the rhythm of the stanza. So from, and then the point, two syllables of light, two syllables. Within, two syllables. The mind, two syllables. Of God, two syllables. Let's have a look at the next line. Let light, two syllables. Stream forth, two syllables. Into, two syllables. The minds, two syllables. Of men, two syllables. Let light, two syllables. Descend, two syllables. On earth, two syllables. Can you see that emphasis, apart from which starts it off? Can you see the rhythm of two syllables? Two, 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 two. Two, 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 two. Two, two, two. And the same for the second stanza. I'm not going to go through it. You can see it from is the number one that starts it off, and then we can see the rhythm. Now, notice something else too. Within, into, is one word, but with two syllables, whereas the others are two words with only one syllable. And notice too that the word within, into, are prepositions. And in grammar, a preposition is a linking word. Here, what does within and into link? It links the point of light with the mind of God. It links this, that particular, the light which streams, and the minds of men. And the same applies for the second stanza. Fascinating, isn't it? And now let's have a look at the third stanza. Now, when we come to the third stanza, the rhythm is different. Okay, we still have from as the starting point, the emanating point, and then it's the center, three syllables. Where, one, the will, two, of God, two, is known, two. Let, one, purpose, two syllables. Guide, two, the little wills, four syllables, of men. The purpose which, four, the masters know, four, and serve, two. The rhythm has changed. But we can see that there is still a rhythm of four and two on the soft line, 2, 4, 6, with three and one within. Fourth stanza. Again, the rhythm changes. Same as the third, from the center, which we call the race, five syllables of men. And then the same one. Let, one, the plan. Two, of love, two, and light, two, work out, two. And the rhythm changes again. May it seal the door, five syllables. Where evil, three, dwells, one. In the fourth stanza, we see that we have exactly the same rhythm, four, five, and two syllables, as in the first line. Wait a minute, I've lost my train of thoughts. No, I've going ahead of myself. No wonder I was confused here. Sorry. Let's back up the truck for a minute. So if we have a look at the third stanza, where the will of God, five syllables. Will being the middle syllable within the five. Five is the number of the fifth mental plane, which is from the mind of our planetary logos, of his cosmic mental plane. And then it goes back to the rhythm of the four and the two. In the fourth stanza, it's the same rhythm as in the first line. The third stanza, Shambhala and humanity fulfills the same purpose of redemption. Let the plan of love and light work out. Same rhythm of one and two syllables as the first and the second stanzas of light and love. May it seal the door, five, number of the fifth cosmic plane of the mind of the Logos, but where evil, three syllables, symbolic of the third aspect of divinity, which is form. Last line, we see the rhythm. Two, two, let light and love. And the rhythm changes slightly. And power, and one, power, two, restore, two, the plan, two, on earth, two. So we have two, two, one, two, 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 two. Symbol, or the two rather, symbol of the will to good. The will and love fused. Or we can see it as two, two, three, two, two, two. Symbolizing the ultimate purpose of the Logos being the transformation of the third aspect of divinity, which is form, into loving intelligence, a fit vehicle for the expression of will, which is his ultimate purpose. We can interpret it both ways and both work out as well. Now, if we look at the definition of mantrams, mantram is the word made flesh, which is a form of word or syllables rhythmically arranged so that when sounded, certain vibrations are generated. So we can see then from the rhythm of the great invocation, we note an overwhelming number of sets of two syllables revealing the vibration of love being generated. And when it sounded correctly, it's designed to be manifested on the physical plane through the arrangement of the words of earth right at the end of the stanzas. And if you remember in the past webinars, we talked about the symbol of the fourth path to Sirius, the origin of the great invocation. And watch these words. Its attribute are cosmic rapture and rhythmic bliss. Its method is duplex to rotary motion and rhythmic dancing upon the square. Rhythmic dancing upon the square, meaning the heart or the love of the soul, beating like a heart rhythmically on the square, symbol of the personality. Or on a macro level, the hearts of the solar angels beating rhythmically on the three lower worlds. Now let's have a look at the planetary effects of the Great Invocation. We saw the individual, we saw the group effects. Now let's have a look at the effects on the planet itself. DK tells us in White Magic that humanity is in reality the brain of the planetary deity. Its many units being similar to the brain cells in the human body. So we can interpret this as, on a planetary scale, the planetary soul, mind and brain are being aligned through the Great Invocation. Hierarchy, impressed by Shambhala, record its purpose and implement the plan of love and light by transmitting it to the planetary brain, humanity, on the physical plane where it is materialized. So on a planetary scale, the enunciation of the Great Invocation aligns the planetary soul, mind and brain through the linking of the mind of God, the heart of God, and the will of God through its agents, the planetary brain cells, us, humanity, who transmits it to the rest of the planetary body, the three other kingdoms. So we can see, therefore, the importance of that soul, mind, brain, sound, connection for the individual discussed earlier is just as crucial for the Logos. His purpose and plan must reach the individual brain consciousness of man. And on the planetary level, as we are the cells of his brain, we are meant to manifest his will, his love, and his light on the physical plane. So the more initiates who retain the facts of the super world, of the intent and the purpose of the Great Invocation in their brain consciousness, the more the brain of the Logos will be able to materialize his will. Now we come to a very important statement of DK in the externalization of hierarchy. I'll read it for you and we will stop at the crucial point. A great deal of the resultant effectness is due to the fact that humanity is using this mantrum, meaning the Great Invocation, in steadily increasing numbers. And this, combined with its scientific use by hierarchy, is very fruitful in its results. Now, due to the effort of countless thousands of men and women everywhere, energies unable to penetrate deeper into substance other than the hierarchical substance and the level of the higher mental plane can now, for the very first time, and these are the crucial words, be successfully anchored on the dense physical plane, or at least upon the etheric levels. And this is a fact, and far more important than you are perhaps able to appreciate it. So let's use an analogy to really understand what DK is really referring here to. And I will use the analogy of a water crystal. When the surface soil is highly compacted and dense, it becomes non-porous. It doesn't soak water. So therefore, it doesn't allow the rain to percolate. Therefore, the infiltration of water into the soil is very poor and the rainwater is runoff. So what gardeners do is that they use water crystals. But what is a water crystal? What does it do? It has the ability to absorb and retain water and swell to many times its original volume, which means that even though there may be runoff, but the very fact that the water crystals are surrounding the roots, there is always water there for the roots to absorb. So if we use this analogy, just like poor soil is unable to absorb water, so too hierarchical energies from the buddhic plane and the higher mental plane from the soul were unable to penetrate and be absorbed successfully in the three lower worlds, which is here analogous to the soil. So in the Garden of Gethsemane, which we mentioned in the first webinar, Christ made contact with the spirit of peace and extraplanetary forces. He became a water crystal capable of nourishing the soil and humanity from within. And DK keeps telling us, Christ has not left us. He has always been here. He is in a physical body somewhere in the Himalayas with his chakras perfectly aligned and his glands perfectly aligned. So you see, this is exactly what we are meant to be doing. We are meant to be like water crystals. While we are in the three lower worlds together with Christ, then the sound of the great invocation said by millions and millions of people are now able to penetrate deeper into the three lower worlds for the very first time in planetary history. This is what he meant. Anyway, this is my interpretation. These are the effects of the sound of the mantric rhythm of the great invocation, acting as water crystals. And this process has been going on since the full moon of Gemini in 1945. When Christ intoned the great invocation for the very first time, and since Master DK gave it to the world. Now, the other point that DK tells us is the saying of the great invocation, all of us together, meaning hierarchy, symbolized here in my very crude image, symbolized by DK and humanity, symbolized here by us, by the group. When we say the great invocation and very, very much aware of singing around. We World Saviors of Souls is the heart chakra of our logos. It is the Retu chakra with Christ, a Syrian initiate. And as you know, we discussed it earlier on, Sirius is the embodiment of cosmic love. Christ is the embodiment of cosmic love. And it is at the very center. It is the jewel of hierarchy. So this is why we need to unite, is because hierarchy is the realm of the soul, is an aggregate of souls, and we are souls. So when we say it as a soul, we need to. So the word of power and the great invocation are only effective if used on the mental plane with the controlled mind focused on their intent and the meaning behind the spoken words. Then they become potent. And we saw that earlier on. Mind, brain, and the spoken word. But when it's said with a power soul, as well as the activity focused and meaning behind the spoken word, the great invocation, then it becomes dynamically effective. In other words, it is manifesting itself on the physical. So a very brief of how to make the great invocation invocative, the injunctions from DK. It involves the dual activity of the mind, understanding the meanings of the words, and then sending it forth, sending the potency behind the words forth. It, as a soul, using the mind and the brain as agents, it must be used as a group, done as my soul, your soul. It is. So, DK gives us a few practical steps of how to say it. The very first one is say the words aloud. For us to really understand this injunction, we need to understand the power of sound. Let's explore this. DK tells us that in Atlantean days, the walls of Jericho collapsed because the leaders of the time knew about the power of the sound and how to use it. but unfortunately, they used it for selfish ends in most cases, which brought the Atlantic continent down completely. Pythagoras, as you know, was one of the incarnations of Master Kutumi, KH, the Retu Master, destined to take the office of the Christ after the Christ moves on to his other solar duties. Now, in his school, his pupils were not allowed to speak for 2 years once they've entered the school, until they had learned the power of speech. They had learned to control their speech. So DK tells us it might be of value here if students realize that every good speaker is doing a most occult work through the power of the sound. Now, in modern days, Hans Jenny, who is a Swiss doctor, artist, researcher, he experimented with the effects of sound waves in a medium such as water or sand, and he coined that the effects of the sound waves as sematics. If you go on the net, you will see the amazing, absolutely amazing patterns that the sound waves make when particular sounds go through either water or sand. And look at this pattern here. This is the pattern when the sound of the ohm is made. Look at these patterns, which is the same as the Indian, I think it's called the Gayatri. No, I'm not sure whether it's called the Gayatri. But anyway, it is the symbol of the infinite. And even more recently, the Japanese scientist, Dr. Emoto, did experiments exposing water to sound. And this is an image or a shot of the polluted water from a dam in Japan. And this is the very same water after a Buddhist monk offered a prayer over it for 1 hour. Look at the transformation of these, of the water molecules. Isn't that amazing? So that really shows us the power of sound. And in the age of wisdom, we are told that God created by the power of sound, and that the music of the spheres holds all life in being. So the soul, on its tiny scale, also creates the new man through the power of the sound. So, hence we understand DK's injunctions that those who use it, meaning the great invocation, must be instructed to say the words aloud, thus making a volume of sound of real potency. The second injunction is to say the great invocation, sounding the ohm after each stanza. So it's to anchor on the physical plane the energy of what's being invoked, which is light, love, and will. No, I've gone ahead. Just a minute. Slide 67. Sorry about that. The other injunction is that it is desirable that we sound the word or the om on the same key. And when this is done, the vibratory effect is far-reaching and certain reactions will occur. So we chose the sound or the note G, which is the second ray note of love and wisdom. And saying it aloud links also the first and the third aspect through what DK is saying here, is not only by saying the words aloud, which is the sound, third aspect, we must say it with all the power of our will behind it, linking the first and the third aspects of divinity together. So it's the invocation of the will to good that is the objective of the forces which can aid at this particular time in our planetary history. Now we need to understand this. Obviously it's very important that we understand that sound is related to the third aspect and the throat chakra, and that the third aspect is directly related to the first aspect of will. Matter is spirit, Blavatsky said. Matter is spirit as its lowest point, and spirit is matter at its highest. And even though it's an apparent duality, but it is an essential unity. And it is united by the second aspect, love. So therefore, how to say it? With all the power of your soul behind you, with intensity of feeling, the second aspect, they will be potent in their evocative appeal if said with mental intensity and ardent purpose. The three aspects here. Purpose, first aspect, feeling, second aspect, and mental, which is the form, third aspect. And DK, speaking of the words of the power about the Antikarana, says the following. It's the thought behind the form, the registered feeling about the words, the understanding of their significance, which is of crucial importance. And if they are uttered with an understanding of their meaning, they are of terrific potency. Another injunction of how to say it, privately and in group gatherings, the great invocation can be said, including the final words. And so let it be, and help us do our parts. We raise the clasped hands above the head, and then at the last word, we bring them down to the forehead, and then to the heart. The raising of the hands above the head, and their returning, touching the forehead and the heart, are symbolic of lifting of the heart and life and consciousness to divinity and the subsequent downflow of the spiritual life into the personality, the instrument through which the loving soul must work and the expression of goodwill. And the emphasis is laid upon the heart center and the necessity to hold these forces there, symbolized by the clasped hands resting on the heart, because the heart is the center of the loving, giving energy and the distributor of life. That's why DK calls these words the vital meaning, vital. Vital, he always refers to the life force, vitality, the pranic content of the physical sound. So, listen to this arresting thought, guys. This will blow your mind. And I will read it word for word. The great invocation, rightly used, could reorient the consciousness of humanity, stabilize men in spiritual being, disrupt and rebuild the planetary thought form which men have created in the past and which has had and is having such disastrous and cataclysmic results, and open the door into the new age, thus ushering in the new and better civilization. This could be done so rapidly that the needed changes would come almost overnight. This could be done so rapidly that the needed changes would come about almost overnight. If only we could follow DK's injunctions and say the great invocation correctly, intoned in the right note, with the full power of the soul and the will behind it. The present reign of horror would end, and the race of men could settle down to a life of group goodwill, individual harmlessness, and right human relations. Now, this is very encouraging with indeed. There is already a movement which implements DK's request of its use and distribution. Distribute the great invocation. I would have you call all the people in every world in the world, every country in the world, to a voicing of the great invocation on the same day in every land. There is already the World Invocation Day, but once a year is not enough. Thank God all the spiritual groups who are affiliated with DK, we all say together at every gathering. So there is a call to arms. DK is seeking all over the world for a group of disciples who can use and will use the great invocation in the right way as per his instructions, and will be willing to be trained to do it in the way that he asks. In this way, there will be a group upon the physical plane and in everyday life who will be able to combine their efforts with those of hierarchy and therefore produce an effective use of the great invocation with its, listen to this word, stupendous results. Not good results, not excellent results. It's stupendous results. So let's have a very brief review of how to say the great invocation. We are to say the great invocation with intensity of feeling, with a full understanding of the intent, the meaning of the purpose of the words, while sending forth the potency that are hidden within the words. We are to say it with all the power of your will, of our will behind it. We are to say it as a soul, using the mind and the brain as agents. We are to say it aloud and as a group, and I'll come back to that point in a minute. And we are to say it in cooperation with hierarchy, recognizing that all souls are one. And we are to sound the great invocation after each verse on the same key. And at the end, to raise the clasp hands above the head and to say the words, "And so let it be, and help us do our part." Now, regarding the sixth point, as a group, in esoteric healing, DK gives us the advice of using our imagination to visualize the group of healers, because he realizes that it's not possible to be together on the physical plane at the same time. So he gives us the advice to use our imagination to visualize the group of healers while sending the healing energy. So here, exactly the same thing. So when you are to, when you are alone at home and you're saying the great invocation, use your imagination to imagine the whole group, whichever group you are affiliated with, or our group, whichever, it doesn't make, which group doesn't make any difference. Saying it together, almost hearing it with your inner ear, using your inner ear to imagine the whole group saying it together with hierarchy. And another suggestion to enhance the effectiveness of the great invocation is the use of color. We know, we've discussed the link between the fourth Buddhic plane and the seventh plane. And on the fourth plane, this electrical force, Buddhi, shows itself as color. All electrical phenomena have an electric origin. Light has a close connection, and it uses as medium the second ether. The second ether, meaning the monadic plane here, the second ether functions through the third, sound, atmic plane, and color is allied to the fourth Buddhic plane. So which color then could we use? The synthetic ray, indigo or deep blue, which is the ray of love or wisdom, the great fundamental ray of this present solar system, and the cosmic ray, or yellow, which is the complement of indigo blue. And it is the color of Buddhi, and it is on the direct line of the second ray. Another suggestion, the symbol. What symbols can we say to enhance the great invocation as we say it? We can either use the diamond, as we discussed, in its geometrical form, or as a diamond, as a heart, sending pulses of love and light. Or, as we discussed again in previous webinars, the sign of the cross with the verses strategically placed in the four corners of the cross and the fifth right at the center, the synthetic line, let light, love and power. So whichever symbol or color, I think would be good to enhance our saying of the Great Invocation. So as a conclusion, so the Great Invocation is to be used as a planetary service, no longer used as an emotional approach to God, but as a conscious, intelligent co-worker aligned with the will of God, cooperating consciously with hierarchy, fully realizing one's part in the implementation of the plan. And this Great Invocation will be a powerful tool in the inauguration of the new world religion, which will be based on the science of invocation and evocation. And we are the pioneers of this new world religion, which Christ is to inaugurate at his return. So perhaps, as a conclusion, and I forgot to add this slide there. So as a conclusion, perhaps what we could do is say the Great Invocation together. And Joe, if you wouldn't mind unmuting everyone while I get the Great Invocation slide up. And then after the Great Invocation, we could discuss and share our insights. So let me...
The audio will not be as effective if everyone's unmuted during recording. It will have some feedback. So,
will it? Right. Okay. So it's a pity.
What we should do is we could unmute everyone. I could unmute everyone at the final OM.
Oh, yeah?
We could do that. That might work.
Okay. All right. Let's do that. So remembering all the injunctions that DK has given us, folks, let us unite with DK, being aware of all of us as a group and as souls. Let us say the Great Invocation with intensity of feeling, understanding the words being said and its intent and its effects. Let's say it with rhythm. And let the sound of the OM that we will carry, the sound of the OM carry the potency of our intent of love, light, and will behind it. So let us start. From the point of light, within the mind of God, let light stream forth into the minds of men. Let light descend on earth, sounding a blue or an indigo or a yellow OM. And thinking of your symbol at the same time. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into the hearts of men. May Christ return to earth. From the center, where the will of God is known, let purpose guide the little wills of men, the purpose which the masters know and serve. From the center, which we call the race of men, let the plan of love and light work out, and may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth. Raise your clasped hands above your head and say, and so let it be, and help us do our part.
And help us do our part.
And bring your hands down onto your forehead and now down to the chest and let them rest on your heart. Thank you, everyone. And perhaps we could open the floor now to any insights that you may have had throughout those last couple of months. I'm sure that you would have lots to say.
You are muted. If you want to raise your hand, you can call on people.
I know it's mind-blowing, isn't it? That we are absolutely speechless. I know I was, as I was working through this webinar, absolutely speechless. How something so simple could be so powerful.
There is so much to absorb, Nicole, that I'm sure
absolutely
it does, as you said at one point, really blow your mind, the power of the potency of this.
Yeah. And I'm sure that there's a lot more. If Starling Hunter is amongst us, actually, this is something that we could do, Joe. Maybe we should ask Starling to give us his insights. I know that he's written quite a series on the Great Invocation, but from the grammatical point of view, I'm sure that there's a lot more in it as well. So I may contact him and see if we can have like a follow on this time, looking at the Great Invocation from a grammatical point of view. That would be fascinating.
Robert has a comment. Robert, do you want to, I unmuted you so you could go ahead and share that comment.
I'm not sure you can hear me.
Yes, we can.
Okay, good enough. I said there are not really good enough words to express this or sufficient words, because the feelings and insights that came through this were, you can't describe them. But it was, I don't know how else to say it. We know more how to participate in this work at this point. And I just want to thank you.
Thank you, Robert. Thank you for sharing that.
Michael asked if it is available to view again. And yes, it will be. The webinars are going to be, some are already posted on Makara, and the slides, and this one will be as well. And I'll send you all the link to that. Risa makes the comment, extraordinary insights and teachings for all of us to learn together. Thank you, Nicole, from Risa.
Thank you, Risa, for sharing that.
Michael Stacy, do you want to unmute and go ahead?
Yes. We were given this great invocation in 1945, and it has a certain rhythm to it, which is marvelous. Mm. In the intervening years, there's been some modifications done, making it more perhaps quote-unquote politically correct. And I don't think it has that same rhythm to it. Do you think that loses potency by using the more politically correct version?
Well, DK tells us that it's the intent behind which is important. But however, if I go back to the very first, I think it was a recall from a recollection from Foster Bailey. It said the exact dictation, and then from Mary Bailey, using specific English wording. I think this is crucial. Deacon knows what he's doing. And yeah, we may think, yes, it's more politically correct, but I think that we need to use it in the way that DK has given it to us, because he's a master. He knows which words that he need to use.
And that's the way I've always used it, but it just brought the question to mind.
Yeah. So it may not have perhaps as potent an effect because of the loss of the rhythm. It may not be as effective, but I'm sure that with the potency of the mind and saying it as a soul and understanding what's intended will be enough to make it effective.
Intent does say a lot about everything.
Absolutely, because intent creates. Yes.
She's in Australia. She's a healer.
Yeah, I definitely knew she was a healer.
Thank you, Nicole.
You're very welcome, Michael. Thank you for your contribution and thank you for sharing.
Go on.
Robert, do you have anything else you would like to add?
Basically, I just wanted to agree with Michael and Cole in that like I just said in a little statement, that Mary and I had pretty much the same conversation this morning, because we've heard a couple of different variations over the years. And while I understand that perhaps some religions or spiritual practices or paths may not resonate as well with some of the original wording, I believe, I think, along with Michael and Nicole and others, that the original is the most powerful, most potent.
Well, I do have a group in Bolivia and southern South America, and you know that those who know English, they'd rather say the great invocation in English, because they say that they resonate and the rhythm of the words is better in English than it is in their, when it's translated in their language. Now, isn't that interesting?
It is, because what you just said is the rhythm itself.
Yeah. Yes, it's lost, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
But again, I'm sure that the intent behind the words and the understanding behind the words will be enough to be also effective. Maybe not as effective, but effective.
Right. Thank you.
Thank you, Robert.
Well, seeing no more hands and questions, Nicole, I just want to thank you and remind everyone that you'll be receiving the link to the recordings and the slides. And I will actually attach the recording to this last webinar. So if you use your registration link, you should be able to have access to the recording even before Brett gets it up on Makara.
Yeah. And everyone, can we please extend our grateful thanks to all who are behind the scene, people like Joe in particular, who is there webinar after webinar looking after the technical side of it. And BL, who has joined us today, who's doing the recording. And thank you very much for all your help, because without it, we would not be able to get this information out to the group. So thank you, BL, and thank you, Joe, for your support and your help behind the scenes.
You're very welcome. And if you would like to contact Nicole, we'll send out her email to you so you can have some direct contact if you have follow-up questions. We just are getting more thank yous expressed. And thank you all for participating. And let's close the webinar. Thank you again, Nicole. Much expression of thanks coming through from people's comments.
Thank you all, and bye, and thank you for attending.
Good night, good day, good morning, wherever you are.
That's right.